Well, in season four, such a blast to catch up with Sam Acho, former defensive end, outside linebacker for 9 years in the NFL. Just an absolute stud at the University of Texas, where he won both the Campbell and Werfel Trophy for his exceptional work on and off the field as a student athlete, as an influencer in the community. You've seen Sam now dive into the media world. You may know his little brother as well, Emmanuel Acho. Sam has decided to join younger brother Emmanuel in the media fold. And you see Sam now all over ESPN covering the NFL and college football. But beyond any of that, the number of times I've run into Sam, just two things just resonate. He's got a joy for life, and he's got a grace and a love for people. And both of those things come from his relationship with Christ. Growing up in a Christian home in Texas, parents were born in Nigeria. His dad is a psychologist, a counselor, a pastor at a church down there in Dallas. And Sam just has a light and a love for the Lord that resonates in so many ways. And over the course of this conversation, you're going to hear incredible wisdom out of a young 33-year-old man that's raising three kiddos and married and figuring life out in many ways. But you're going to hear wisdom about what it means to shepherd well, as he got to experience in his upbringing and trying to do in his home now. And I love this line, and it hit me right where I'm at in life, raising my kids and watching them grow up, sending them off into the world as young adults. And his line about knowing who I wasn't, but having to figure out who I was. It's an incredible journey, rich in stories and rich in so much wisdom. Here's Sam Acho. Take me back as early as you want to your upbringing there in Texas. Were you born in Dallas, born and raised in Texas?
Yeah, bro, you said as early as I want to. So it all started when I was about 2 weeks old. You know, the first football was in my hand. No, I'm kidding. I really didn't start playing football till, well, here's how it started, I would say. I remember being a kid. And my dad is a mental health professional. So he's a marriage counselor. He has his PhD in psychology. He does business stuff, you know, both here in the United States and in Nigeria. My parents are both born and raised in Nigeria. And he also is a pastor. He's a pastor. And so we would go to church on Sundays, and then we would finish church, and we went to, you know, big church in Dallas, Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship Church, right, with Tony Evans. And then my dad soon after that started his own church. But we would finish church on Sunday, and my dad, like me, he loves to talk, right? Gregarious, all the things. So he'd be talking to all the people, and we'd be usually the last people to leave. But then we would come home and turn on the TV and watch football as soon as we got home from church. Mind you, my parents were born and raised in Nigeria, so football for them was soccer. And I guess when they came here and they got into like the craze of football, so they would just love watching football. And so every Sunday after church, we come home and watch football. I wouldn't want to watch football. I'd want to like go outside and play or whatever. But the TV would be on and the games would be on. And that was like, I was born in late 80s, so like the 90s, like the Cowboys were really doing their thing, as you know. So like we were living in Dallas. So it was a great time to be, you know, in Dallas. And so that was kind of our Sundays. And obviously through the week, I went to a private school, an all boys college prep school called St. Mark's School of Texas. It's actually the number one rated school in the nation, actually. My parents really valued education. And I remember being in second grade taking this test to see if I could get in. I didn't even know about the school. I just took this test and I got into this school. And apparently it's a super prestigious school, right? I had friends who scored perfect scores on the SAT. One of my friends in fifth grade, he won the Scripps National Spelling Bee. His word was poco curante, you know, and like, but that was the thing. Like, that was the school we went to during the week. Church we went to on Sundays was a predominantly black church. So like a predominantly white school, predominantly black church. And my parents, as you heard, were born and raised in Nigeria. So it was like this Nigerian household. So pretty, you know, different cultures, different kind of things throughout the week. But football was kind of like this, I'm not going to call it a mainstay, but it was something that was a part of kind of what we did, football and faith, if you will, and family. And so that was kind of the thing growing up. Now, I didn't play until I was in the sixth grade or so. My younger brother, Emmanuel, he actually played before I did football. We both played soccer together, young age, basketball. But then football, it was a lot of hitting. You know what I mean? And I wasn't the biggest fan of hitting. And so my brother, my little brother was. He's the guy who's like breaking things in the house. And so he was in fourth grade, his first year playing. And I didn't play that year. And I was, you know, I didn't want to hit anybody, nor did I want to get hit. But he dominated. Like, he, fourth grader, his team was the Lions, which unfortunately they were bad then. They're still bad now, but both in Little League and in real life. But he was dominating. He'd score like 5 and 6 touchdowns. Every time he touched the ball, he was playing running back and linebacker, he would score. And I was like, man, that'd be fun. I'd love to do that. So the next year I went, I tried out for football, and I was a bigger kid. And I was so big that the rules wouldn't allow me. The rules only allow for me to play offensive line, which, and you're laughing, which you should be, because if the worst position in football is offensive line, you get no credit and you get all the blame. If you have a perfect game, they will never call your name. If you make one mistake, you will get a penalty, you will get a spotlight, and it was just bad. So that was my first experience playing football. By the grace of God, my second year playing, seventh grade, I played for my school. I think the year before was like a YMCA kind of league. I got a chance to play defense, and that was when the love of football really began for me. I remember being in seventh or eighth grade, you know, running around campus one time at our school and saying, I love sacks. And people were like, whoa, chill. I was like, no, sack, like getting a sack on the quarterback. I love sack. And so, but that was kind of where the love affair for football and I kind of began.
Well, you mentioned a name there, and I'm curious the influence he may have had on your dad, as your dad then went out and planted. He's a name that I'm pretty familiar with, that I think a lot of folks in the Christian ministry are familiar with, and that's Dr. Tony Evans, and the impact that he has had on so many lives. People that have been on this podcast, the Above and Beyond podcast, the influence and the seeds that he planted in their lives. How influential, impactful, Sam, was he with your dad in your home? And then, as you mentioned, your dad is a psychologist and a mental health professional and a marriage counselor. Is he still a pastor, your dad?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, my dad actually started it. He helped Tony Evans kind of plant that church. They were meeting in his garage initially, and my dad came in town. I think they had just bought the building, and so my dad kind of came and really helped that church grow. He was leading the counseling ministry there, right? Mm-hmm. The family ministry there. And so, right, really helped it grow. Any issues people had, they would go talk to, you know, hey, talk to Dr. Acho. That was like the thing, you know? Yeah, God gave him a gift. And so yeah, he helped that grow. And then about after being there for 15, maybe 20 years or so, he felt called to go start his own church. So now he started a church, Living Hope Bible Fellowship in Dallas. He started that church about 15 or 17 years ago. And so that he still pastors. Now he has that church in Dallas. And still does his psychology stuff. So he still is a marriage counselor for a ton of people, pro athletes and all the people.
So tell me about growing up in all boys school, as you said, and you referenced there, a highly esteemed academic, incredible school down there in Dallas. I think many folks know your little brother, Emmanuel, as well. And you two are kind of the Dr. Achos of sports right now, as you're at ESPN and he's doing his thing over at Fox. Tell me about the word, man. Tell me about the truth, you know, being a pastor's son. What that was like in your home and the impact and influence it had on your heart, Sam.
Yeah, well, the coolest thing for me, Brock, was just, it wasn't the fact that I was the son of a pastor. It was the fact that I lived in a home where people loved Jesus, like mom and dad loved Jesus. So dad, sure, pastored a church, but it wasn't just on Sundays, right? Like he shepherded his family really well. My mom as well, right? Like she really shepherded, like on every Saturday morning, you know, we would have our kind of devotional time as a family. We had two older sisters as well. So it'd be the six of us. We'd sing, we'd pray, we'd worship God in the mornings, right? And then even during the week, we'd get up and we'd pray in the mornings. Like we'd worship God every day, no matter what. And before bed, we'd all would pray together. And so it was this thing where it was like, it wasn't just, hey, I go to church on Sundays, I'm a Christian. Like I had a great example from my mom and dad of like what it means to really follow Jesus. And even they came from Nigeria, mind you. They were born and raised in a developing country, and so didn't have a lot. And so like faith there is different than faith here. Here it's like, oh, okay, I'm a Christian, or I go to church. It's kind of the popular, cool thing to do there. When my dad first said he was going to go into the ministry, people thought he was crazy. They're like, dude, what are you doing? We don't have any money. You know what I mean? Like we need, go get a job. And he's like, I want to tell people about Jesus. And I was like, nah, dude, get a job. But crazy enough, God calling him to the ministry is what opened the door for him to come to America. Right. Like even he was, there were some missionaries who kind of were, I guess, from America, came to Nigeria, and somehow they connected, and my dad was in America. They wanted him to come and teach and to preach and all these things. And so, like, your gift will make room for you. And so, yeah, like, for us, it was really ingrained at a young age of, like, God will supply all your needs, no matter what those needs are, whether it's, like, health, right? Whether it's just, like, some people, it's like, well, God doesn't care about football, you know? But it's like, dude, God cares about me. You know what I mean? And if I'm playing football, he cares about things that I'm doing.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, God doesn't care about, you know, if I get a whatever. It's like, no, dude, God actually loves me, and he wants to know me. And he, like, even through the beginning, since the beginning of time, go to Genesis, like, so much of Genesis is God saying, dude, I want community. I want relationship. I want you. You know what I mean? I want you. Even, you know, with Abram, before God changed his name to Abraham, it was like, hey, I'm going to make you like a great nation. Like, I'm going to make you, like, you're going to be great. And I'm gonna show compassion to you and kindness. Right. And Abraham believed in him. And so for me, it's this idea of like, oh, wow, like, God cares about me. And if there are things that I care about, maybe he cares about them too.
I know, Sam, through the years of doing this podcast, that there's just all sorts of different folks that listen to it and find encouragement in unique ways. And I love doing this and utilizing this media, because it's really just, and we prayed before we began, it's really God's platform. And each of these takes a life of their own. And the words keep resonating in my head as you reference there, something that I don't think I'd heard before, but I know in talking to a lot of moms and dads in parenting today, and you said shepherding, right? You didn't say parenting. Oh, the way my parents, you know, led us, or how they were parenting. You used a pretty powerful word right there. And that was, hey, man, we had an opportunity to watch my dad and my mom shepherding us in our home. Talk about the impact and influence of that now that you are shepherding three kids at what, six, almost five as we tape this, and three. Tell me about the impacts. I know a lot of moms and dads and young parents, like, how do I do this? How do I parent well in this day and age? And what does that look like in a God way to glorify God through my parenting? Or, as you said, and I love that beautiful word, shepherding.
Well, I mean, it's, when you think about a shepherd takes care of sheep. A shepherd has a flock, and a shepherd takes care of sheep. And not all sheep are the same. Some are, you know, more stubborn than others. Some are more hard-headed than others. Some need different ways of being led or guided. And so I saw that with my parents, right? Like, not all kids are the same. And I see that with my kids. All my kids, we got three of them, and they all have different personalities, different, you know, tendencies, all these kinds of things. And so when I say shepherding, I just have this picture of us getting out of line, and then whether it was calmly or directly, whether it was aggressively or more in a chill way, getting us back where we were supposed to go. It's almost like God kind of had the plan and the vision, whether he gave that to my dad and kind of dad implemented that. But my parents' job was to get us where we needed to go in the way we needed to get there. Not every sheep needs, you know, I don't know what the people use on, you know, for sheep, but needs to be prodded that much. Some just need to be, you just need to say their name. You need to say their name. And so I saw my parents do that with me. You know, I love learning. Academics is huge for me. So, like, I remember when I was playing football and I got like a C in a class. I love playing football as well, right? Remember the beginning, I love getting sacks and, you know, on quarterbacks. And so, I remember I got a C in a class and my dad threatened to take me out of football. And this was like my junior year when I was getting recruited heavily. And so for me, that was all I needed. And it wasn't even a threat. It was more of a promise. Like, yeah, cool. You want to keep on getting C's. We'll sit out football for this semester, get your grades up. And I was like, but dad, I got a scholarship to USC. Yep. USC, take the C out of there and we'll be fine. Good. You know, but that was what I needed at the time. And so shepherding, you know, and all of us are different. And there are even times, even as I've gotten older, my parents have done a great job of just shepherding me and my siblings. And now that I have kids, I'm trying to learn and understand how to do that well.
Mm. So take me through some of those years. Take me through the high school years, the recruiting years. This is the intersection of faith and sports, and people love both of those things. We know our culture does, and I love, as you do, getting a chance to share both of those things. So walk me through your high school years, and then why ultimately you end up being a Longhorn, not USC, not anywhere else, why you decide to stay in the state of Texas.
Yeah, so... I never planned on going to play football in college. I remember I was at this highly academic school, you know, the school. I remember I wanted to train to get in better shape. And I wanted to go to the weight room at our school. And they would close the weight room because they wanted us to study for finals. And mind you, like, I was going to be fine in class, but I'm like, guys, I'm trying to get a scholarship, right? So for me, you know, I had a coach who went to, I think he used to coach at TCU or SMU or something. Long and short of it is, like, he said, hey, you might be good in college. I said, okay, great. What does that even mean? He said, make a highlight tape. So I had my recruiting, had like a computer science teacher make a highlight tape. And right around that time, my younger brother wanted to go to this football camp at USC. And USC at the time, that was like Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, all those people. Mind you, I didn't really care about football when I was younger. And so didn't know much about USC or anything. I go to this camp, and the long and short of it is I got discovered at the camp. Pete Carroll called me and five other people up to his office and said, it was like the top 300 camp, by the way. It was a top 300 camp, the top 300 players from the state of California. It was an invite-only camp. Mind you, we weren't invited. Like, we just kind of showed up. We heard about the camp. We saw it online, and we showed up. And they let us in, and I did really well. And that was kind of the first taste of, like, oh, you might have an opportunity to go play in college. And so Coach Carroll called me and four other people up to his office. They didn't offer scholarships on the spot, but they were like, hey, y'all are really, really good. We have another camp coming up in about a month from now. So we're going to see how those kids do. And then we'll be in touch about a scholarship. And I was like, oh, what? You know what I mean? Because mind you, like, the week or two before, I went to a football camp at Vanderbilt only because, like, one of my friend's dad at this prestigious school was like the chancellor or some president of the board of regents or something. And at the Vanderbilt camp, they were like, yeah, you're okay. You've got raw talent. We're not overly impressed. So I was like, all right, cool. Thanks for telling me. I didn't know. And USC is like, dude, you're awesome. And so, so they kind of had that conversation, and they said, hey, we'll be in touch. I said, okay, great. I'm walking out of the meeting. I'm like, oh, coach, by the way, you said you're going to be in touch. In 2 or 3 weeks from now, I'll be going to Nigeria to do medical mission work. Every summer, my family goes to Nigeria, and we do medical mission work. So I said, and there was no service in Nigeria. So I said, okay, if y'all call me, and you said you're calling in a couple weeks, if you call and I don't pick up, it's not because I don't like you. It's because I don't have any service. They say, Sam, don't worry, we'll be in touch. Well, 2 weeks later, in the airport, get a call. USC offers me a scholarship.
Wow.
And it was, you know, Ken Norton Jr., the recruiting coordinator, and Pete Carroll, the head coach. And they say, Sam, we love what we saw. We want to offer you a scholarship. And all we want you to do is to verbally commit and just say, I want to be a Trojan. And I didn't know about the recruiting process, but I wanted to be a man of my word. And so I was like, okay, verbally commit, want to be a Trojan. What do you mean? And Ken Norton Jr. is like, okay, here's Coach Carroll. So he gives Pete Carroll the phone, and I'm like, and so we're kind of like doing like a little bit of small talk. And finally, Coach Carroll says, hey, Sam, is there anything you'd like to share? Right? Because I'm sure they do these calls all the time, right? I want to be a Trojan. I want to be a Trojan. I want to be a Trojan. And Sam, is there anything you'd like to share? And I say, hey, Coach, I would love the opportunity to one day consider the potential of maybe being a Trojan. Coach, I got to go to the plane, taking off, and I hang up the phone, right? So I was like, I didn't know what to do. Like, I didn't, something in my spirit was like, hey, don't, like, I just didn't feel, it wasn't sitting right. I had to verbally commit, and I hadn't visited anywhere and all these other schools. And so I hang up the phone, we get on the plane, and I start freaking out because I'm like, man, what did I do? Did I just make the worst decision of my life? And I'm like freaking out, and my dad, mind you, we're on a plane in Nigeria to go and serve to do this medical mission work. My dad's like, dude, just, you know, God's in control, right? Don't worry about it. Mind you, he wanted me to commit because he was like, just commit. It's USC. It's like, what do you mean? But I couldn't do it. And he's like, God's in control. Mm-hmm. And so we land in Nigeria. And for whatever reason, like all those worries that I had worried about all faded to black, faded away. And we're just there serving people, loving people. Like, just, you know, it's a medical mission trip my parents started. So we had, you know, doctors and nurses and surgeons, a medical mission trip, doctors, nurses, surgeons, dentists, ophthalmologists, pharmacists, pediatricians, all these people going and serving people who, you know, needed help. Mm-hmm. And it just felt like home, right? Didn't think anything about football, nothing. Well, I came back and, mind you, no service because we're in a village in Nigeria. And we land back in the States and my phone starts just buzzing and buzzing and buzzing. And I looked at I had a ton of missed calls and voicemails for numbers I didn't recognize. Well, the one that I saw that I recognized was that high school coach who used to coach at SMU or TCU. And so I click on his, I listen to the voicemail. He says, Sam, I don't know where you are. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know why you haven't called me back yet, but call me back as soon as you can. Your whole world is about to change. Come to find out, all those missed calls and voicemails were from head coaches all across the country. Two things that happened during my time overseas. Number one, schools had found out that USC had offered. And number two, my highlight tape, that highlight tape that computer science teacher had made for me. I didn't know what a highlight, just a computer science teacher, right? Had like my GPA on it and like, you know, honor student, it had gotten put on this recruiting website called Arrivals. And so I came back and all these coaches wanted to offer me scholarships. So that's kind of how the recruiting process happened. And I ended up going to Texas. Mind you, like every school, Alabama, every school you can think of, Florida, whatever, Alabama, whatever the schools are, they were offering me shoeboxes full of letters. And the only school that hadn't offered at the time was Texas. And if you'll remember, Texas had just beat USC in the national championship. And I remember the thought went through my mind. It was like, well, maybe I'm good enough for USC, but I'm not good enough for Texas. That was kind of what I was thinking about. And that wasn't the case. What was the case was that Mack Brown, who was a head coach at the time, happened to be on vacation while this was happening. And the rule with Coach Brown, at least back then, was you don't call him on his vacation. That's his 10 days or 7 days or whatever he gets. Do not call him. And so finally, we were like, well, we're going to go somewhere else. So finally, I guess one of the coaches, assistant coaches, sheepishly called Coach Brown. And Coach Brown says, it's better be good. And they said, it is. They sent him the highlight tape. He liked it. He said, okay, see if you can schedule a visit. So I visited. And unlike a lot of the other schools I visited, when I went to Texas, two things happened. Number one, it was me, my mom, my dad, and my younger brother. And we walked into his office. And it wasn't just him and this recruiting pitch. It was Coach Brown, it was his wife, Sally, in that meeting room. They knew we were Nigerian. Some of the Nigerian players on the team kind of greeted us as we came in. And that was kind of the first thing, right? The family, because it's talking about the family atmosphere. And the last thing was, he said, Sam, I know that like you could choose anywhere in the world. And you waited on us, so we're going to wait on you, right? Most people, we tell them, we give them 24 hours to decide to commit. But for you, we'll wait. And as soon as he said that, I said, okay, where do I sign? You know what I mean? Like, so it was just this idea of he just was a man of integrity and authenticity and a man of his word.
Was there any part of you that when Pete said, do you have something to share with me, that you wanted to share Jesus?
Well, no, not at the time. Not at the time. You know, I was 17. And no, but check me out, though, because that's a great point, Brock. I was 17. And though my parents, though I went to church, I was more like, I didn't know Jesus well. It was more like, well, I don't, you know, smoke or I don't drink. So I try to do the right thing. I didn't know Jesus. I didn't understand his grace and his compassion. And so it wasn't even a thing of like, let me tell you about Jesus. It was more like, I just was scared. I didn't know, you know. Now, as I got older, right, fast forward, I'm skipping a lot. Well, we can kind of get to it. But like, as I got older, I got to know Jesus better. And so then whenever opportunities came about, with coaches or even with NFL owners, right? Because I do stuff with NFL Players Association, negotiating, you know, collective bargaining agreements and all that kind of stuff. I started to share Jesus with coaches or owners or general managers because I knew him better. But back then, I didn't really know him that well. I was
okay.
More like,
okay. So talk to me about that. Right. Talk to me because, again, in the shepherding world, and some of this is just the world that I'm living in now. We're kind of in a crazy place as this episode's being taped of our oldest going off to college. Right. And we've been shepherding her in our home and now she's off, you know, 1,000 miles away doing her thing, playing basketball and watching her, you know, turn into a young adult, making decisions and growing. And, you know, it's that conversation between all this head knowledge, right? And I've been taught scripture. I've been brought up in a Christian home. And, you know, you hear about a lot of kids and even in my own journey, right? When does that become real? Who are those that impact that? What is the moment? This podcast has had so many amazing testimonies over 4 years of different athletes and players and across the whole spectrum of how that shifted, right? How that head knowledge or that truth they knew became heart knowledge in relationship, right? Religion versus relationship. How did that transform in your life? Who are the impact players? What were the moments, Sam, that most shaped that relationship, as you said, with Jesus?
Well, for me, it was college, right? So I'm 17. Where am I going to go? Decided to go to Texas. And I left school. I didn't know who I was, but I knew who I wasn't. Right? I knew I didn't want to be the guy, you know, going out and partying and all these kind of things. Right? So I knew who I wasn't. By the grace of God, I had a friend in college who helped remind me of who I was. His name was Trevor Walker. He was a walk-on quarterback at Texas. Third string, fourth string, whatever. Walked on. And I saw him outside of the dorm one day, like the biggest dorm on campus, right? 50,000 student campus. And he was reading his Bible, like outside the elevator, unashamed. And I kind of like was walking and I recognized him from the football team. And I don't remember if he called me over or I kind of stood by him or whatever. And I was almost like, dude, how are you just not ashamed of doing this? You know, and he was like, dude, well, I'm trying to live this thing out. So let me know if you want to join in. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And so it was me and it was him. And then there were some other guys on the team. And we started kind of just saying, what if we could, like, what would it look like to follow Jesus on campus, on the football team, as UT athletes, as what, like, what would that actually look like? And we started kind of living it out. We had this really cool community of like players and, you know, some people on the team, some people not on the team, like we would do Bible studies together. We would, you know, we would have like, you know, I forgot what we called them, but like we'd do parties, but like clean, if you, I don't know what you call them, but like we'd hang out and kick it, have fun, but we weren't doing what everybody else was doing. You know what I mean? Like,
it's called a Holy Ghost party. Thing. Okay.
A Holy Ghost. Right.
Ain't no
exactly.
Party like a Holy Ghost party. Cause a Holy Ghost party don't stop.
Don't stop. Facts. And so like, it was just really cool to have that community. Now, granted, none of us were perfect, right? We made a ton of mistakes and still try to figure it out and all those kinds of things. But it was really Trevor who said, hey, let's live this thing out. And I ran into him outside of the Jester dorm on the third floor on campus. And he had his Bible out and the rest was history.
And that was the beginning of really shaping. I love that picture there. I don't think I've heard it framed that way. It is very common in the NFL. Right. Even I think college players, the elite college programs, but certainly the NFL, Sam, you have to figure out what you don't do. Right. There's an ego. Like, I can do everything and run through. No. What do you not do well? And then let's focus. Actually, one of Pete's, I think, great strengths through his run in Seattle. Let's highlight what guys can do. So is that relationship with Christ grew as you learned more and more of who you were? How did that shape your college years? And then ultimately, as you get drafted into the NFL?
Yeah, well, I just knew I wanted to play for God's glory, right? And I remember having this arm sleeve that I put, burnt orange arm sleeve, right? We had our white jerseys or burnt orange jerseys and white pants, black shoes. And I wasn't a big accessory person, right? Some people got all the armbands or the, you know, sleeve, whatever. But I had that one and just on my arm. And I wrote on it the number 4. And then with the end of the 4, I put an 8. So like for his glory. And I had that on my left hand. So every time I put my hand in, I was a right defensive end. So every time I put my hand in the dirt, I would look at that. And it reminded me that I was playing for God's glory. Even as I played football, I said, okay, there's got to be a way to, you know, because played on Saturdays. Oftentimes with that group I told you about, we would go to church on Sunday mornings, but we'd have practice on Sundays. And in NFL, you play on Sundays. So it's like, well, we got to go to church on Sunday. There might be some Sundays I'm not going to go to church. But how do I worship God with what I'm doing, with who I am? And so, like, I started understanding that football could be a form of worship to God, like using God gifts, using the gifts God gave me on the football field. And so that's kind of what I tried to do as I played on the field and also off the field, just remembering that that this is all for God's glory.
Giving God the glory, right? You did it with an armband. You did it collegiately. You did it in your home state, people that loved you and your family. And ultimately, your brother comes and joins you at Texas. And then you move into the big, bad world of the NFL. Right, you get drafted, and Bruce Arians is there in Arizona. You play 4 years there, four in Chicago, another year with Bruce down in Tampa. Walk me through giving God the glory in that NFL locker room as an NFL linebacker D-end. What did that look like?
It was easy, but it was hard. It was easy, but it was hard. When you follow Jesus, you stand out and you look different. And so it's easy in that way because people know and you know who you are and who you're not. But it's also hard because you stand out and you're different and people know and you know who you are and who you're not. And so the easy part was that I didn't have to pretend, nor did I want to pretend. Mm-hmm. Like the Bible's real clear, train up a child in the way he should go. And when he gets old, he won't depart from it. You talked about your kids, right? Like going off to college, you've trained them up the way they should go. So when they get old, they don't depart from it. It's like the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. It's just the way it works. So I knew who I was, which was the easy part, but it was difficult because I was in this world where people didn't get me. Right. If I ever got upset at a practice, mind you, this is football, big, bad NFL. If I get mad, people say, well, Sam, you're a Christian. Christians aren't supposed to get mad. Is that a curse word I just heard? Right. Like, that's what it was. And I didn't know what to do. I was like, well, I don't know. I didn't. I thought I did. I didn't know because people hadn't seen a follower of Jesus who was a fierce competitor, who wanted to love people well, but who would dominate you on a football field. It didn't compute, but that's who I am, right? Fierce competitor. I'm going to love you well, love people well, but I will dominate you when given the opportunity. And that's how God wired me. And so it took a while for people to really get that. And it took some consistency, right? I can't be the guy doing a Bible study on Wednesday, then on Thursday and Friday, I'm out in the club. You know what I mean? But that's what they were used to. Like, they were used to, like, you know, go out every day and party, smoke, drink, sleep with whoever you want to sleep with. And then before the game on Sunday, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, the kingdom come, that will be done. Like, that was the NFL. And that was just, wasn't me. And so as God continued to show me who I was, right? Not perfect, but like made mistakes, but was open and authentic and real and vulnerable with guys. Guys started to become more attracted to me and say, well, Sam, how and why? And can you help me? So that was what it became. And so, you know, it's funny. One of my teammates, his name was Ronald Talley. He was my teammate in Arizona. He's from Detroit. He has a real deep, deep, you know, hey, what up, Acho? Like, I'm from deep voice. And he would call me Bebo. And I'm like, bro, why do you call me Bebo? He said, hey, you know, you the black Tim Tebow, right? Bebo, right? So like the black Tim, but it was like, that's what it became. Like you're the black Tim Tebow, but not even that, but it was like, dude, you're actually like real.
Yeah.
Like, you love Jesus. You're not ashamed about it. Like, you're not just going to pray before a game or a practice. Like, you're going to be open with your faults, your failures. You're gonna pray for people. You're gonna like let people see you, let the world see you, like the real you. And you're gonna help me grow as well. And you're gonna compete. Like, you're gonna help our team win. And so that was kind of how that took place. People have a misconception of being a follower of Jesus, where they think, okay, well, you know, he's got to kind of be nice and soft and just kind of wave. And it's like, no, dude, like, if you looked at how Jesus talked with some certain people, like go read Mark. Look how he addresses some of the Pharisees and like the Sadducees. And like he'd be calling people out to their face. You know what I mean? To their face, you know? Think about Deontay Wilder. He said, to this day, right? He calls people out, right? And we all know about the story of Jesus flipping tables. Like Jesus was very fierce. He was a lion, but he was also a lamb. And that's something I'm trying to teach my youngest, because he just loves messing things up, like breaking things, you know what I mean? And tackling people, and he's three. And it's like, hey, dude, there's a time for the lion and there's a time for the lamb. Mm. And I think as I learn that more, I can help teach him that more better, whether as athletes, as parents, like there's a time for us to be lions. There's a time for us to be lambs as well. And I think that's what I'm learning.
Is the lion coming down the stairs right now?
I think the lion is coming down the stairs right now.
That's so good. And he said, hey, Dad, come on, man. Come on, Dad. Yeah. You're busy all the time. I'm going to last thing along those lines is, and this is a beautiful picture, and I wish you all could see this right now. Sam is at home, and we're watching Sam on ESPN. He's there every weekend. He's breaking down the NFL now that door, the NFL closed, and this whole media world, and you've written an awesome book, and you're involved in ministry, three young kids. Oh, my gosh. Life is so busy for you, Sam. So take me through how Sam Acho, in this world you find yourself in now, in that home with the young kids, in this media world at ESPN, how are you glorifying God now? You don't got that armband, right? You're not looking at your hand in the dirt. Now you're in a business world, on a media campus, raising those three beautiful kids in your own home. What's the charge for Sam Acho to glorify God now?
Yeah, I'm learning. If I'm being honest, Brock, I'm learning every day. I've been at ESPN for 3 months, right? That's been new. I just wrote a book. Actually, it came out about a year ago, right around a year ago, just celebrated the year anniversary of Let the World See You, How to Be Real in a World Full of Fakes. My book just came out. So like, that's a piece that people know about me. I've been, you know, sharing those with people on campus. So there's that. There's like, hey, we know people who've read that book. They're like, we know you, so you can't fake and pretend. But also it's like, I've only been at ESPN for like 3-4 months, you know what I mean? So I'm learning, what do the rhythms look like? What is, how do I love people well on campus, right? How do I love people well, like, if I'm on TV, like, how do I, you know what I mean? Like, and it takes, you know, there's a kind of last story. I was on campus a few days ago, and I had two hits. I had like 4 or 5 that day, but I was in between two hits for SportsCenter. And I did the first one, and I was kind of, like, frustrated and a little bit angry and annoyed at, like, people at work and, you know, like, just producers or coworkers or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, I was a little bit, like, perturbed. And I remember just being like, this is, like, what is going on? Like, what is actually going on? And instead of rushing, like I usually did from one thing to another, or like going, I just took some time to pray. I took some time to pray. And I was still mic'd up and had my IFB in, all these things, but I just found a different room and I took some time to pray. And there was a song that I had heard at church on Sunday. And it essentially, the long and short of it is, the song said, God, it says, I will praise you on the mountain, and I'll praise you when the mountain is in my way. And I feel like in a lot of ways on ESPN, I'm on the mountain, but there are a lot of times where I feel like that mountain is in my way. And that was just this reminder of praising God anyways. And I started singing right then and there. Was singing like in the little room by myself, was singing. And like, I was watching this group perform, like I was watching a YouTube clip. And I remember watching them. I'm like, man, this group, it was Hillsong United. I was like, they are excellent. Like, they are just excellent at what they do. And I really felt like the Lord, said, and you can go be excellent too. You can go be excellent too. Right? Think about it. I was about to be on SportsCenter, right? Everybody watching sports at 12 o'clock SportsCenter. And I'm over here frustrated and complaining. And God says, no, you go be excellent too. And oh, by the way, go be you. Stop trying to like, oh, let me be the guy with all the stats or the numbers. Just be you. Be you. Right. That's what my whole book is about. Right. How to be real in a world full of fakes. Like when you're you, God gets the glory. The people around you benefit. The world around you thrives. When you're you pretending and faking, that might get you in. That's the lion you hear in the background. If you hear this little whining, that's my lion. The faking and the pretending, like that'll open up a few doors. But being you will open up doors you could never imagine. Right. So I felt like the Lord was like, go be you. And I went and I was me. And like, it was the best hit I've ever done. You know what I mean? I was, you know, like I was talking about to my Arizona Cardinals. Their Cardinals are 5-0 or 6-0, whatever. And I'm like, guys, y'all don't get a lot of love on media right now. But like, don't worry. Chill. Like, you're going to be fine. You know, like I was just being me and on the screen and even intermittently. Right. I remember popping in the bathroom real quick and I said hi to a dude in the bathroom, and he was like taken aback, like, oh, whoa, like you're on TV, you're saying hi to me, a production assistant, like you know my name, like it was like, he was like, oh, wow, thank you, right? Like, at the end of the day, I want to love people well, period. Like, when I die at my funeral, I want people to say, Sam loved me well, and so I try to live by that, whether I'm on TV at ESPN, whether I'm speaking, wherever I do a ton of speaking, so whether I'm going somewhere and speaking, whether I'm writing. Let the World See You or other books, right? I want to love people well. And that includes my family.
Well, we love you for taking this time for this podcast, Sam. Can't wait to continue to watch God use you. Some beautiful wisdom in there. You had a beautiful wife and 3 young kids. Go love on them well, because I know how busy this season is. And thanks for your heart to share, brother.
Awesome. Thanks, Brock.
Above and beyond, the intersection of faith and sports. Subscribe to receive every episode at AboveAndBeyondPodcast.com.